Hey there, beautiful people. Welcome to Fan Side, the podcast for all those complex and complicado conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am wide awake, no longer tired, ready to get it moving, Jarrett Hill.
And I am Superwoman. Yes, I am. Yes, wow. She is. Travell Anderson. Hello, beautiful people. Hope you all
I forgot what was even happening. Well. Like,
coming up on the show today, we are talking about white people, resistance, one and the same. You'll see. Stay tuned. But first,
if that wasn't a tease, I don't know what is.
Well, ooh, but first,
buckle in, folks.
But first, Jarrett wanted to give you all a book update. Y'all know that we have been writing these things called periodicals, and it has been a journey.
Periodicals?
Yeah, our books periodicals are periodicals. Would be a newspaper.
No,
books ain't periodicals.
I don't think that's how that works.
Laura, can you verify that? Can you Google that? Silver Horse. Is it newspapers? I do that.
Laura's at our ear.
It's newspapers, stupid.
It's newspapers.
Okay,
it's
she newspapers, didn't say stupid.
You fool. Anyway, we've been writing these books. Historically Black Phrases, you and I are co-authoring together. Then I have my to-be-titled biography / memoir of trans images on screen. And it's time to give you all an update because, you know, we've still been working on it.
Yeah, so as y'all know, our book will be out next fall.
Allegedly.
Right. God willing, and the supply and demand returns to normal. and so we're kind of at another milestone right now where the day you all are hearing this show, we are going to be hosting our first kind of, you know what, in a very Housewives of Atlanta kind of way, a sip and see.
Come on, sip and see.
That the people can come see the book and like see the content of it. And so we have a handful of friends that we're having over to check it out. I'm really excited because it'll be the first time that people will get to kind of like see what we've been writing and get to experience kind of what we're putting into it and how we're wanting people to respond to it. It'll be our first opportunity to get that kind of feedback and see, you know, what things we want to tweak before our last draft gets locked, because we have another deadline in a week and a half from now.
In like 4 days from now, from when they're hearing this on Thursday, from like 4 days from now.
Okay, but I'm talking about right now, amen, because I don't need that kind of pressure in my life. See, I don't need that kind of negativity, bitch. But we're about to reach this major milestone of, you know, kind of locking in the book. And one of the meetings that we've recently had with our publisher has been on our design. And I'm a person who tends to think design first. And so like not having design has made this, I didn't realize it, but it's made it a little bit more challenging for me as a process, because I love to start with design. And so, to be very honest, while it's been very exciting and I'm super grateful for this process, I haven't felt excited about it until after our design meeting, when I really started feeling like I could see the book and like the cover that we've envisioned, I've been really the most excited about. So that's gotten me kind of energized about it, as opposed to how I've just been kind of feeling like a little bit daunted, to be 100.
It's great to know that I'm daunting.
I love how you made
working
this book
with
you.
Me is daunting.
Is that what you heard me say? Is that what you heard me say?
Anyway,
y'all see how? Listen, I would love for Dr. Diet to write us in about what just happened there, and the way that you internalized that.
It's called acting, darling. Okay, you know how you like to act like you came up with the idea for this show.
Oh, uh-huh. Really?
Uh-huh.
You know what? Give them the update on your book before, till we can cuss at each other in the commercial.
Oh, my God. Okay, yes. My book, which it was announced as Scene: Trans Lives on Screen, but we are changing that title. We always were going to change that title, but that's the title I had selected on so that I can get it sold in the name of Jesus. And so I have turned in my book edits. It's now getting copy edited, as well as I'm having a sensitivity read of it by another member of community. And we're talking book cover designs and things such as that, and other things are happening as well. Interesting things. Interesting things. Life is on a move.
Do you want to kick around the ideas that you're kicking around for titles since you're still pretty undecided?
I do not, because I am not undecided.
I was going to say, you probably shouldn't do that.
I'm not undecided anymore.
I have told Travelle what the book title should be. It was something that Travelle came up with. Major air quotes around that. No, but like, it's something that Travelle came up with, and I was like, oh my God, that is it. Yes, bitch, I live. I can see the cover. And then they came back and were like, oh, I named it something completely different. And I was like, oh, okay. But the process of naming this book has been something that has been going on since the very beginning.
Absolutely,
for you.
Absolutely. And it's still ongoing, right? Because everything is a conversation with a publisher, with an editor, with, you know, people who have thoughts about what is marketable and what is not marketable, you know, what might be off-putting, right? Colors that might be off-putting, words that might be off-putting, design choices that might be off-putting to someone on a shelf, you know, all these different considerations, right? That go into the books that you see on your shelves that you may not even think about. So it's been a very interesting process and a rewarding process as well, because, you know, she liked to fight.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't see that ending coming. I think that's a great place for us to take a quick break. When we come back, we're getting into fighting. The resistance. Fansize coming right back.
Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. Now, y'all know we talk every single episode about getting the mental together, right? You know, and what we mean by that is we mean sometimes, listen, you carrying around some trauma, you carrying around some hurt, you carrying around some things that you need to work through, okay? And that means sometimes you need to sit down and talk to somebody, all right? Well, you can do that through BetterHelp, okay? Because BetterHelp is online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat only therapy sessions. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. You can keep your bonnet on and it'll all be just fine. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you could be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. I have used BetterHelp myself. I've had a couple different therapists on BetterHelp. Black women, listen, they be getting me together, honey. I see y'all. Thank you so much. Okay. And you can find a therapist that is right for you. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fanti. That's betterhelp.com/fanti.
Have you been thinking about what you might want to be trying to make yourself feel better, or to relieve some pain, or to just relax at night? If you haven't thought about microdosing, you should. You've probably heard about microdosing. And if not, just know that all sorts of people are microdosing daily to feel healthier and perform better. Our show is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. For me, I love these. The Microdose Gummies are super tasty. They're really convenient. They come in a great little package. But most of all, they're incredibly effective. My best friend, as I told you guys recently, just hit me up again talking about, please make sure to send me the link and give me the promo code, because he's been saying that the indica has been giving him the best sleep that he's ever had in his life, and he's an insomniac. So just a little bit of personal experience there from a friend. Microdose is available nationwide. And to learn more about microdosing THC, you can go to microdose.com and use promo code FANTI to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description. But again, that's microdose.com, code FANTI. Welcome back to FANTI. I've been pitching this idea to Travelle for weeks.
Have.
Usually we'll text each other. Okay. We ain't even got started yet. Usually we'll text each other a handful of words. Travelle has pitched me things like FANTI gay rappers or FANTI exes. For me, some of them have been like FANTI college degrees or FANTI public apologies. I've been thinking a lot about how much resistance costs. Specifically, how much resistance costs the resistors. I recently said to myself, like, I'm not giving my whole life to the movement. Being a leader, a visible person with an outspoken politic, a teacher trying to rewrite systems in students' heads, it's a lot of pushing and fighting and resisting. The idea for this episode hit our iMessages from me as Fanti being mad at white people, to which Travel will often respond, And so when we were talking about this, we had a conversation about it, and it's rooted in how much time and energy it takes to remind white people of what's going on, to point that thing out, to endure the aggressions, to sit in the meeting and debate with yourself whether or not you should speak up again. It's the awareness of why she used those words and why he inflected that part of the sentence. It's thinking about how your intersections may show up and become a challenge in the space you're walking into. For me, and I imagine many others, it's constant. It's not something that can just be turned off. Being mad at white people, and often more specifically, the ways whiteness shows up in our lives, is often righteous. To quote Wanda Sykes,
a lot of trust has been broken.
In our conversation preparing for this episode, we arrived at it not being solely about white people or whiteness, but really about resistance in general. Resistance to racism, homophobia, transphobia, and there's a list that could take the rest of the hour to read and we probably would not finish it. But it all boils down to the resistance required to be aware as a member of an intentionally exploited community. Before we move on from that, I do want to point out intentionally exploited community is the new language for marginalized community, written out by Yolo Akili on Twitter. Loved that. And I've been using it everywhere else, intentionally exploited community. But to be a part of an intentionally exploited community is to constantly, you know, be in this tension. And so, Travel, I'm curious, how do you think about the cost of resistance on yourself?
You don't know the cost of the oil.
This is one of her favorites.
In my alabaster box. So.
I wish I could see your face.
There is video. Anyway, I mean, I think. Yes. So, I mean, I feel like you and I, we talk about this kind of often, right? Which are like the unknown, unseen things that go into kind of the work that we do, right? Both the work that we get paid to do, also the work that we do for like community service and giving back, and also the work that we do just by existing and moving through the world in the ways that we do. I think so much about that is rooted in many of these ideas about like how we are supposed to like comport ourselves in different ways, how one should show up doing a certain type of action, right? In this case, we're talking about resistance. I feel like when we talk about resistance, most people go to like, you know, we getting out in the streets and, you know, pounding the pavement type of grassroots organizing type work. But I also think about the ways that those of us who are not the street warriors, who are dealing with battlefields of our own elsewhere, of our collective own elsewhere. And sometimes I feel like we don't talk enough about those folks. And oftentimes because we don't know their names. And so that's how I'm thinking of resistance in this context. What about you? Go ahead.
I think about it in multiple contexts, right? Like a show like this existing is resistance, right? Like how often do we spend time here talking about isms and obias and the ways that they show up in pop culture, in our lives, in our entertainment, in our politics or whatever, right? So like this is a form of resistance, right? Just existing in these spaces. But I also recognize what you're talking about, because I remember in 2020 us talking about how, you know, I didn't go out and protest and you didn't go out and protest, right? Both of us have participated in protest over the years, but during COVID, it wasn't something that I felt comfortable doing as an immunocompromised person, right? I'm HIV positive, and like I've heard very conflicting things about how COVID interacts with HIV and medications and all those kinds of things. But also, like, I'm pretty horrified by the things that I was seeing in the street. And so I had to deal with myself about what was my role in the resistance, right? And I had to make sure that I understood that the work that I'm doing every day in being able to be a part of messaging, being a part of the conversation, being a part of thought leadership, being able to lead in community and teaching all those different ways now are the ways that my resistance shows up, right? But also it costs something, right? It is exhausting. It is tiring. It is not always very rewarding, right? And then sometimes it is incredibly rewarding and exciting. So as we kind of get into the fan and the anti here of how we see this, some of the fan for me has been interesting because it's so intertwined with like personal and professional, because I cannot deny there is a professional and cultural currency in outrage, right? And resisting and pushing back and like doing that vocally and visibly, right? There is a, I hate to continue using the word currency because I feel like we always use that, but like there is a cachet that comes with being a person who is outspoken about the things that are happening in the world. And simply looking at like the last couple of weeks here, what?
Well, I wanted to ask a quick question. Is there a difference for you between being, you've used both outspoken and outrage. You've used them kind of synonymously. Mm-hmm. And I would wonder if you meant to use them synonymously.
Well, I mean, I think we're being outspoken about our outrage, right? And our outrage tends to show up in us being outspoken. I haven't been swapping them in and out for each other, but I mean, I think those two things are so intertwined in this conversation. And if we just think about how on this show, this year alone, we've spent a good amount of time talking about Don't Say Gay and like the implications of that. We are always talking about racism and transphobia and homophobia. We've been talking about Roe v. Wade here the last few weeks as we've seen that coming and now it's happened, that has fallen. And like having to like come up with the words to say, that is resistance, right? Like that is a way to be able to message to people like these are the things that are happening and these are some things that we should be thinking about regarding it, right? That is also part of resistance. That is also part of protest. That is a part of that work. And that's something that I can't ignore that there is a currency in it, though, for people like us who you're writing a book about trans images on screen, right? That is about uplifting these things that haven't really been accepted and appreciated into history in the ways that they should be. As we're writing our book about historically Black phrases, we are writing this book to be able to write into history the ways that we have spoken in this time when we are seeing, you know, stories of erasure of Black things out of history for students and things like that. And so all of these things are ways to resist, but they are also other things as well, right? They bring us joy. They bring us sustenance. They bring us finances. They bring us all kinds of different things. And so it's a very intertwined thing. I see your face doing a lot.
Yeah, because I reject the idea that what we are doing is about outrage.
That's not what I'm saying.
I'm also just thinking about the ways that like outrage and being outspoken, which again, I think are different things, I think show up, this currency that you're talking about, right, shows up in some ways for some people and not in the same ways for other people, right? And I wonder about how that influences this like just broader zeitgeisty understanding of the currency that you say is present in outrage.
I don't think outrage and being outspoken are the same thing, right? But you can be outspoken about all kinds of different things. But I'm talking about the ways that we have been a part of media. The second piece of the fan here for me is that resistance is a lot of what has built the careers that we have, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that you were at the LA Times, right, and the role that you were in was a very unique position that you created, right? In a way that was to highlight these stories of Black and brown and trans and queer people in media. I think it was specifically Black, right? And so like that is a form of resistance, even if it's not if it's not like discussing outrage, or unless it's, that's a part of the piece. Even if it's not op-eds in political theory and strategy, it is still a form of resistance to saying, like, you guys do not cover our stories. You don't cover our movies. You don't cover our shows. And I want to do that. Right? That is a bit of resistance. The looking at the work that you were doing at Out, that is resistance, right? The existence of Out magazine, the whole purpose of it, right, is to be able to, well, still advertising, but like really to be able tell the stories that aren't being told, though, right? We are writing these books. I did political commentary as resistance. I did a lot of writing of op-eds, but also even in the writing that I did, I was usually centering the stories of Black and Brown people, that something that had to do with queer transness or something that was generally progressive. And so as I'm thinking about that, all of the work that I've been doing in recent years has felt like some form of resistance, even as president of NEBJLA, right? I'm in meetings today, right? Like doing resistance work. And so it's challenging to think of it because there is a fan side of it where it does something for us, but there is an anti as well.
Well, so that's what I guess that's what I'm trying to tease out. Like what is that benefit? And for whom is said benefit of the resistance, right? Because you're right. Our careers in many ways is currently built on the act of us resisting something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet maybe this is me just leaning more heavily on the anti side of all of this. Maybe that's what I'm doing preemptively, which is just to say that, like, is the benefit that we have now stated outweighing the risks, the costs, the sacrifice, the, decentering that comes with that work? Like you, I would say that I am tired of resisting. I am tired of resisting. And I am so tired of resisting that I no longer respond. That's how tired I am. So, remember, last couple months, right, you will have these moments. You were going hard on Don't Say Gay, going hard on Don't Say Gay, going hard on the anti-trans bills. And I would sit there and let you have your moment. Right. And like, I think in there is a world in which I would have been right there with you. Right. As fired up, if not more fired up with you. There is a world where I would have done that. But I'm at the point where, like, girl, y'all turn. I'm gonna let y'all handle it. Let y'all handle it because I'm tired. And so I'm just going to sit over here and, pop me some, Mike and Ike's or M&M's while, you get it off. You see what I'm saying? Am I making any sense?
That makes sense. I think that we've spent a good amount of time on the show talking about depression and burnout, right? Like, and taking time and being able to figure out how to do that better, right? And we see your tweets where you were like, there was a tweet about us. What did they say? Like, oh, I hope you guys had a great prenup. It feels like this is a divorce. And it's like, no, honey, someone's just on vacation for a couple of weeks, right? But like, I get it. But like, it's been more and more important. That really tickled you.
It really did.
It's been more and more important for us to figure out how to make this work, like how to make all things work. And I don't mean fanti. I mean like make work work, make life work, right? In a way that works for everybody and that people get what they need. Because I remember seeing, and I wanted it to be a part of our A segment today, but we ended up talking about the book. But like, there was a story of a man who was celebrating his 27th anniversary at work. He was on the Today Show, and like to celebrate him, they brought him like a cup and some other like plastic straw or something. And he was just like, he'd never missed a day of work. He had been there every single day. He had this, kind of harrowing story, I guess. But like, I watched that and it kind of broke my heart. I was like, Jesus, this man has given everything at this job and to his family. And like, he just, it broke my heart to think about the way that capitalism has made us feel like if we take a day off, if we are out of work for a couple of days, if we don't respond to the email immediately, it's specifically like a white supremacist capitalism that really makes that like our culture and our norm. And I think about how long it takes to feel off before you actually can like enjoy vacation. And like a lot of that is also about like having to resist, right? And because even if you think about when you and I were in Temecula with our friends, right? And I don't know if I talked about this on the show or not, but we're walking down the street and like I made eye contact with this man who was sitting down and like I nodded and smiled and said hi. And he said back to me, oh, I thought you were gonna punch me or something like that. And I was like, what? And we are the only like black people that we see in this like downtown area. And like, we're just here having a good time, right? And like someone says some wild shit to you and it's like, mm-hmm. now I gotta deal with this shit? Like, it's always more. There's always something more to be resisting. So I get you saying that it feels like you're in a time now where you just like, you don't wanna respond. Because oftentimes it's like, what's the point in responding to this? Like, why do I even put up with it? What is the point? But then also there is the it's tiring piece is also the point, right? And like, that is what's so frustrating about it, because I know that the point of all of this is to wear us down and to make us not want to fight for ourselves anymore. And that is what makes it fanti for me, because I'm like, I want to sit down and rest, and like, I'm not giving my whole life to the movement, right? But then I'm like, oh yeah, but like wearing us out is the point, right? As we continue to see things begin to fall. And it makes me think about this Toni Morrison quote that I often reference. She says, the very serious function of racism is distraction. It keeps you from doing your work. It keeps you explaining over and over again your reason for being. Somebody says you have no language and you spend 20 years proving that you do. Somebody says your head isn't shaped properly, so you have scientists working on the fact that it is. Somebody says you have no art, so you dredge that up. Somebody says you have no kingdom, so you dredge that up. None of this is necessary. There will always be one more thing. And like, that just, it resonates so deeply. And it's like, oh, they want to wear us out. But also like, if we're not resisting, it's just going to happen, right? Whatever they're pushing. And so it's a dichotomy of like wanting to rest, but like not wanting to give up, right? Wanting to take a break, but not wanting to like sit it out completely. It costs a lot of emotion and time and anxiety and, you know, a million other things.
Well, while you were speaking, the line that kept playing in my head was that resistance can be, you know, like one of those like time loop experiences, right? A self-fulfilling time loop experiences where you resist because you ultimately want to make space for yourself where you are. Right. And that ends up changing the cosmology of that particular environment. And every time you go into a new environment that also is not prepared, right, for your brilliance, you have to change that environment. Then you become known as someone who changes environments and you build your career off of it, right? Because this is how I have become known, right? And then it makes it then difficult, right, to divorce the personal work from the resistance work, because they're so intertwined, right? The interesting thing is, you know, what then do we do, right? Is it taking vacations? Is it, I don't know, bath bombs, you know, is it some sort of rotation? Like, what does that look like, right? Because another thing in my head, especially as we talk about resistance in the context of the socio-political moment that we are in, have been in, is that, like, community has often been the way that, like, the most, how did you say it? The most intentionally exploited among us have been exploited, right? Have been put in the spaces and places that we've been put into. Community has always been that thing that has kept us going and helped us through to whatever alleged promised land that we say we're working towards. So then how does one kind of just wrestle with the understanding and presence of that all, right, as we chart this path forward?
I think for me, it has been being really intentional about my off time. Mm. For a long time, I was never really off. In the evening, you can hit me up and it's fine, or I'll be on my email in bed and all this kind of stuff. And like, I've become a lot more intentional about like having specific days that are off. It's really important to me to have a day where I don't have anything on my calendar. And like, that has been something that is restorative. It's also been important for me now lately to start having more thought about who I spend my time with and the way that, like, are people bringing me up or are they bringing me down?
That's why, right? You ain't been answering and, like, my phone calls? How am I...
Can you imagine? And then we, like, start fighting, know, right? Right here on the show.
I'm sorry, Fred. Keep going.
No, but, like, I'm a lot more intentional about, like, the people that I'm spending time with and who I'm, like, having in my space every day, because it's important to me. And, like, I don't want to spend the time that I do have being brought down.
Absolutely.
Right? And so it is in those kinds of different ways that I find myself getting my energy back. Y'all know that, like, I'm in church, and like church and faith and my experience with God more specifically has been more restorative lately than ever before.
Sarah Jakes Roberts and them be getting you together, honey. I know they do.
I mean, listen, between Sarah Jakes Roberts and Torrey Roberts and Bishop Jakes, like, they've been the ones that I've tended to follow the most regularly. And like, it's been really helpful for me, like, coming from a place of being depressed and suicidal. A lot of that was about how exhausting resistance was, right? Like, after the Trump administration was over, that's when I, like, really crashed, like, jumping off a moving train. And so we have a fan and an anti here, and I feel like we've kind of touched them both, but, like, they're very intertwined with one another because it's so hard to parse them apart.
Yeah.
You also talked about having to always be transformational when you go somewhere, right? And, like, that's something that I know we at least touched on in the first Fatigue or Fatigue of First episode that we did about being the first Black this, the first queer that, the first, you know, whatever. And, like, then having to go in and be transformative as opposed to, like, doing a good job by everybody else's standard, right? You have to come in and reshape the thing. You got to make it bigger and better than it ever was. And then, like, your white counterpart comes in and, like, they can, if they, as long as they keep it alive.
But again,
fine.
It's also that self-fulfilling loop thing that I was talking, right? Because it's going into spaces that think they are ready, right, for you, right? And then you get there and it's like, actually, you're not ready for me. And so now I have to also get you ready for me, right? And so it just ends up being this thing over and over and over. And, you know, some of us are able to endure it when it comes with a check. Okay? At least for a little bit.
At least for a while.
At least for a little bit. You know, a little something. That's what contract, okay? I'll give you a month and a half. I'll give you a month and a half. You know, anyway, I'm rambling.
I mean, even that part of it is interesting, right? Because, like, I don't think cishet white people know what it feels like for that kind of emotional labor, right? I think that everyone who has, like, a public-facing job where they're talking about their life knows about emotional labor of having to share things that you've gone through or whatever, the things that you've been through or how you got where you are or, you know, the challenges that you overcame. But, like, to layer on top of it various other intersections of intentional exploitation is something that I don't think white people can understand, and I don't think we can even try to get them to understand it. And so, like, to then have that as your job, right, it is a different thing. So then it requires a different kind of thought process about being at work versus being at home. Watching film and television is something that the things I'm watching are starting to be different because I'm like, oh, I won't have comment on that, or people won't be asking me what I think about this, and I can just, like, escape into it, right? And so it's a different kind of way to engage day-to-day life as opposed to, like, the workday.
Last question before we go. Maybe the only question, because did I ask a question? It don't matter. If you weren't doing work that is resistance, what would you be doing?
Well, the funny thing about that is whenever I got asked before, like, what would I be doing if I wasn't, you know, in journalism and media, I always said I would be a teacher because I'd have a captive audience every day and they'd have to listen to me. And like, now I'm a teacher too, right? And so I'm kind of getting to do both of those things. But even there, I do see how it is a bit of resistance. I think it's hard for me to not be doing that work wherever I am.
Because of who you are or because you're Black?
Because of who I am, I find it hard to like just sit and not do anything, right? To not be a part of making the thing better or making it work or ideating the thing. It's a hard thing for me to just sit down. But I also have to then figure out how to take care of myself in the midst of being engaged. And so that's how I have to think about it differently. I have to be really intentional about my off time, about when I'm on vacation, about when I have a day off, about when I'm spending time with friends or family or turning on Do Not Disturb, because I can't just be always on all the time because it has run me down, right? And now that I'm like back and feeling like I have energy again and excited and like eager for the things that I'm doing next, I don't want to kill that, right? I don't want to burn that out again. So I want to be thoughtful and intentional about it because I love the work that I do most days of the week, right? I love the work that I do and I love what I get the opportunity to be a part of, but I also have to recognize better that it costs me something and that I have to make sure that I'm paying myself.
Thank you for sharing, friend.
We want to know what y'all think. Hit us up on social media using the hashtag FantiFam. We're on Twitter and Instagram at FantiPodcast. Coming up, we're getting into dishonorable mentions, and we're going to wrap this thing up. We'll be right back.
I'm a psychic. My name is Psychic Carrie.
I'm Ross.
Oh, what a pleasure to meet you. Of course, I knew your name was Ross, as I am a psychic, but please take a seat.
Well, I was hoping we could talk about my podcast.
Yes, I know.
It's called Oh No, Ross and Carrie.
Yes.
We investigate from science, spirituality, and claims of the paranormal. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Yes. This whole podcast, it sounds like it's been a real challenge for you lately.
Actually, it's a lot of fun.
Yes, exactly. Because it's so fun.
I don't know how you
this
do it.
This will be $75.
Okay, that seems fair.
Oh No, Ross and Carrie.
At MaximumFun.org. You knew it was a .org.
I have a gift.
Hi, I'm looking for a movie.
Oh, I gotcha.
There's that new foreign film with the time travel.
There's an amazing documentary about queer history on streaming.
Have I told you about this classic where giant robots fight?
Or there's that one that most critics hated, but I thought was actually pretty good.
Ooh, I know. The one with the huge car chase, and then there's that scene where
the car jumps over the submarine.
Wow, who are you eclectic movie experts?
Well, I'm Ify Wadiwe.
I'm Drea Clark.
And I'm Alonzo Duraldi. And together, we host the movie podcast, Maximum Film.
New episodes every week on MaximumFun.org.
And you actually just walked into our recording booth.
Oh, weird. Sorry. I thought this was a video store.
You seem like a lady with a lot of problems.
All right, now it's time for our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories or people that caught our attention this week that deserve either a call out for their good or their stupid. Travelle, what you got?
I really just have one this week, and it's just more so a mention. There was this mm-hmm. new show on the CW called Tom Swift. It's like this Black, gay, I think comic book-esque character, the Black guy. He got superpowers and doing stuff.
You sound like a huge fan.
Well, I had just started watching it maybe a week or two ago, and it was canceled.
Okay.
Five or so episodes into its season, it was canceled. That means we're only getting one season of it. They're still going to air out the rest of the season. But I'm just like, aw. I was hoping that we were going to, you know, have some sort of longevity in presence of like Black, gay, you know, ness on screen. And no, I guess they said no.
They said you better right. take your little homosexual ass and get you some Lil Nas X and keep it pushing. Watch a music
Do a
video
little
or something.
Something. But yeah, I just wanted to highlight that because I was like, oh, that's unfortunate. Like I said, I haven't delved into it completely yet, but I was like, oh.
Well, I'm really sorry to hear that. From one dishonorable mention to another, I just want to give a quick dishonorable mention to Texas, and more specifically, a group of 9 educators on the state that submitted the idea to the State Board of Education that we teach slavery as involuntary relocation.
I'm sorry, what?
As opposed to enslavement? Yes. This story comes from NBC News. I'll give you the first graph here. It says public schools in Texas would describe slavery to second graders as, quote, involuntary relocation under their new social studies standards proposed to the state's education board. A group of 9 educators submitted the idea to the State Board of Education as part of Texas's effort to develop new social studies curriculum. The once a decade process updates what children learn in the state's nearly 8,900 public schools. We've got the link to the story
in our show notes.
That's our story coming from the AP. We were just talking about how we've been talking about don't say gay around here a lot, right? And, like, this is, one, it's about erasure, right? Because when you start teaching children that slavery wasn't slavery, it was involuntary relocation. And why should we even be so worried about them? They just got moved, right? That's a lot of how we talked about Native American communities when I was a kid, right? Well, we just kind of moved them out of the way. It's like, no, you slaughtered and killed those people, right? And raped and pillaged their... We don't have to get into the specifics
of that, but you understand what I mean by that.
Listen, but like, this is how we do this, right? As we're trying to erase queer and trans people out of schools in Florida, we see this happening in Texas. And like, also the people who run these states are also running for larger office, right? And so it's really, really alarming to see these kinds of things happen. But also, like, of course, because there's always going to be one more thing. I want to give some shout outs and honorable mention to Tabitha Brown. I recently saw that Tabitha's line of things is now in Target for a limited time. For those of you that don't know Tabitha Brown, she kind of started out on social media and has that voice that everybody just wants to listen to all the time. And she has really spun that into so many different things. She's got this line that I'm talking about in Target. And now she also has a brand new show on the Food Network called It's Complicated, which I don't love the name, but I think you would love, Travelle. She's doing like this whole, you know, you love a plan, you know, a competition show.
So tell me why. I read this in the script. And I could not wrap my head around how to pronounce that word. I said, I don't know what that is. But guess what? I do love it.
I had to say it out loud. Yes, I had to say it out loud a couple times just to get it. But it's the first ever plant-based competition show on Food Network. And she's hosting it. It's her show. And, you know, I just think it's really exciting. We've seen a lot of really dope things coming from
her. Let me go add that to my queue.
Yes.
You know, so, I love me a cooking competition show, honey.
Yeah. So that's going to be on Food Network. So shout out to her. It is now time for...
Black history is happening every day. Alrighty, today we are bringing to you the story of the first known published Black composer, Vicente Lusitano, perhaps. Okay, this comes from a BBC story that we will link to in the show notes that says that Lusitano was born around 1520 in Portugal. Now, a 17th century source described him as, the word they have in quotation marks here is pardo, which they say is a term used in Portugal at the time, meaning mixed race. Oh, he was mixed-ish, okay? Come on, Yara Shahidi, okay?
Okay, you know... Okay, Wendy, I need you the way that you...
Isn't that her?
First of all, it wasn't Yara. It was Tracy Ellis Ross. Trash. You are awful.
Oh, dang it. Wrong one. Shoot,
Yara Shahidi just sat up and asked, now why am I in it? Like,
now why am I in it? Right.
Can't take you nowhere.
I'm sorry, girl. I'm sorry. My mind be racing and be going faster than my mouth sometimes. You see what I'm saying? Anyway.
I got you. This mixed race man was a Catholic priest, a composer, and a musical theorist, but his name and music were lost in the annals of history and only now is being resurfaced by music scholars. Black people be making good music since forever, just so y'all know what it is. Shout out to Elvis the movie.
Thank you for reading the rest of my script there. You didn't have to do all that.
I was trying to help because, honey, she said she was having a hard time.
No, I didn't say I was having a hard time. That's not what I said.
I would ask.
That's not what
I would ask Laura to roll it back and play like 30 seconds ago, but I know you didn't use those words.
That's not what I said. That's what you heard. Exactly. That's what you heard. That's not what I said.
Anyway, if this conversation. All right, let's get about here. Shout out to, I think it was Stephanie that DM'd me asking what Big Purr means. She was like,
yes.
Y'all be saying that on the show. I've Googled it. I don't know what that means. I love that. Yeah. Anyway, if this conversation piqued your interest and you want more of this here,
good.
Check out, that was very Dipsy of you. Check out other episodes that have a related conversation. Episode 29, Vote or Don't, Badoo Gotta Go, featuring Mervyn Marcano.
Yes.
That is going to do it for this episode. If you are listening to us over on the Apple Podcast, we ask that you leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And we ask that you share the pod, let people know what you love about it, share your favorite episode, and then talk with them about it. And then they'll be in it. They'll be hooked. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, we're at Fanti Podcast on both Instagram and Twitter. You can use the hashtag FantiFam or send us an email to fanti@maximumfun.org.
Yes, and as always, if you'd like to become a financially contributing member of the Fanti fam, you can do that by going to MaximumFun.org/join. Our music is brought to you by the one and only Core Reese. That's Core.ECE. All right, check him out wherever you get slay-worthy tunes. Our graphics are done by Ashley Wynn and the folks over at Moonhouse Creative.
Our editor is Will Hagel, and our producer is... Laura Swisher!
Booyaka, booyaka! Oh, wow.
This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist-owned. Audience-supported.
And I guess I'll go first. Because Jared is dying of a coughing of something. It's all right, sugar. It's all right.
No, I'm fine.
It's all right. It's okay. You'll get through. You'll get through.
The water went down the wrong way.
You'll get through
it. I was trying to be inconspicuous and shit.
My bad. You'll be all right, though. The people got to know the real of what goes on to doing this show. And sometimes we get, caught up. Because we drank in some water to lubricate our pipes, okay? And it go down the wrong hole.
Okay.